I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Good morning. Welcome to Axios Today. It's Friday, May 21st. I'm Nyla Boudou. Here's what you need to know today. Moves towards a commission on the January 6th attacks. Plus, get ready for another active hurricane season. But first, today's one big thing. Israel and Hamas agree to a ceasefire.
After 11 days, the fighting between Israel and Hamas appears to be ending. The Israeli cabinet and Hamas approved a ceasefire yesterday, which took effect in the early hours of this morning. More than 230 Palestinians and 12 Israelis were killed in this round of conflict. Axios' Barak Ravid joins me now from Tel Aviv. Good morning, Barak.
Hi, good morning.
We're talking to you about 10 hours into this ceasefire. It took effect around 2 a.m. your time. Did both sides claim victory at that point?
Yes. We had a quiet night after 11 days of fighting. And yesterday, just before the ceasefire started, both the Israeli government and Hamas, each side said that he won. In the Israeli cabinet meeting, all the ministers, Netanyahu, the security chiefs, all said that, you know, we hit Hamas very hard. Hamas took a blow. And at the same time, Hamas officials went on several television channels in the Arab world claiming victory and claiming that they created the new equation with Israel. I think it was, expected. And at the end of the day, I don't think that any side here had like a grand victory. I think it's more safe to say that both sides lost. Hamas lost a lot of its military capability, a lot. And Israel, I think, got into a place where it realizes that its legitimacy and its diplomatic maneuvering space is much narrower than it was 4 months ago.
How much did the U.S. play a role in the ceasefire?
Yeah, I think it played a role. It took the Biden administration some time to realize what was going on. Okay, for the first 4 months of the Biden administration, the policy on Israel-Palestine was benign neglect. They didn't want to deal with it too much. They hoped that nothing will happen, but then the crisis happened and everything backfired. But very quickly, after the crisis started, they got their act together and started making a lot of phone calls. Biden spoke to Netanyahu, I think, 6 times during 12 days, which is, you know, quite a lot. And I think that on the one hand, the U.S. did give Israel quite a lot of backing for more than a week, that the U.S. totally backed the Israeli operation. But then after like a week, 8 days, the pressure started until this phone call several days ago when Biden told Netanyahu, this has to stop. Netanyahu still tried to tell him, oh, I need another 48, 72 hours. At the end of the day, between 12 to 24 hours after that phone call, the ceasefire became a reality.
How fragile is this?
It is. It is very fragile because the root causes of this conflict weren't solved. Okay, Gaza is still in a hopeless situation. The relationship between Israel and the Palestinians are very bad. There's zero trust with the Palestinian Authority. And there's a lot of tension in the West Bank, in Jerusalem, in Gaza, and inside Israel. So a renewed conflict can be just a matter of time.
Axios' Barak Ravid from Tel Aviv. Thanks, Barak.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back in 15 seconds with Margaret Taleb in The Week in Washington.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back to Axios Today. I'm Nyla Boudou. On Fridays, we like to catch up with Axios' managing editor of politics, Margaret Talev. This week, with some news out of D.C. you might have missed while the world was focused on international crises. Hey, Margaret.
Hey, Nyla. Great to be here.
Margaret, this week in Washington, it's been all about the January 6th Capitol riot. What's the latest with the bill that would create a commission examining the insurrection?
Well, Nyla, the House voted to approve the January 6th commission. And not only that, but they voted with almost three dozen House Republican votes. And so that's given some people hope about the prospects for this in the Senate. But that's not how our team at Axios is reading the room right now. It's just no coincidence that Mitch McConnell, the Senate minority leader, came out early and said he opposes this bill. And as Elena Treen, who covers the Hill for us, found out in her reporting, like, the number you got to get to is 10. You got to have 10 Senate Republicans willing to vote with Democrats in the Senate to get this commission. And she can't find 10 who are there yet. The obvious place to start is with senators who voted to impeach Donald Trump at the end of his presidency. So if you can't get these guys on board, there's no way you get to 10. And without 10, you don't get the commission.
There's also a new funding request that includes spending for Capitol security. This would harden the Capitol. Do you think this will have a similar fate?
It seems like such a no-brainer, right? Like, when would Congress ever not vote to spend money on themselves and protecting themselves? And in any other era in modern American politics, that would have been a slam dunk. But look at its vote in the House. Just barely, by literally one vote, 213 to 212, I think was the vote. And that gives you a clue about where things are going in the Senate.
Margaret, for people outside of Washington, why does spending $2 billion to harden the Capitol matter to them?
Well, look, we're coming up next week on a year since the murder of George Floyd. And as we're seeing on everything from the attack on democracy in the Capitol to how the nation responds to massive challenges in our racial reckoning and modernizing our country, we're just at this political impasse where violence is the answer when politics can't solve the problems. And that has put the American democracy in an incredibly precarious place.
Axios' managing editor for politics, Margaret Talev. Margaret, thanks so much.
Thanks, Nyla.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration released this year's Atlantic hurricane season outlook yesterday. According to the report, we can expect an above-average storm season across the Atlantic Ocean. Axios' climate and energy reporter, Andrew Friedman, is here with the forecast. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Andrew, I just have one question for you. This is the sixth unusually active or above average hurricane season in a row. So at what point do these busy seasons get considered the new norm?
This is the new norm. There's been an active phase of the Atlantic since about 1995. So it only takes one to be a terrible storm and impact a lot of people and cause a lot of damage. But if you're getting to the point where it's kind of a broken record to say, well, it's going to be another unusually active season, another unusually active season. The one good thing, though, is that this season does not look like it's going to be record-breaking, which last year's season was. The large-scale factors behind that are just a little bit different going into this one. So it looks above average in terms of activity. But it doesn't look crazy like we had last year with 30 named storms.
Axios' climate and energy reporter, Andrew Friedman. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
One last thing before we go today. Our Axios friends in Minneapolis did a poll this week about how early is too early to cut your lawn on the weekend. This is not scientific, but 60% of people in the Twin Cities said any time before 9 a.m. was too early. Now you know. And it's not goodbye for me for the weekend. I'm back tomorrow with a special episode of our Hard Truth series. This month, the barriers for finding a job when you've just come out of prison. Axios Today is brought to you by Axios and Pushkin Industries. We're produced by Alexandra Boti, Nuria Marquez-Martinez, and Sabina Singani. Our sound engineer is Michael Hampf. Dan Bobkoff is our executive producer, and Sarah Kane Lanigu is our executive editor. As always, special thanks to Axios co-founder Mike Allen. At Pushkin, our executive producers are Lito Malad and Jacob Weisberg. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Enjoy your weekend.